Hello, everyone in Blog Talk Radio Land. I'm so happy to be here, and I would like to give a big shout-out to Frank Mills, the composer of Music Box Dancer, which you were listening to at the start of my show. He has given us permission to use it for the theme song anytime we want, and I really appreciate it. I love that song. Hope you like it as well. Tonight, we have a really special guest. I believe you probably have not listened to too many people talk about composing 25,000 songs. I know I haven't. And his name is Jim Farber. He is a composer, and he was born in San Jose, California. And let me bring Jim on. I see that he has called in. And just sit back and enjoy and listen. And by the way, the guest call-in number is 347-326-9915. And I am going to start the chat session. So if you want to chat or call in and talk to Jim at any time, ask him any questions, please do so. And so here we go.
Hello.
Hello, Jim. How are you?
Hello. Certain ways okay. Thank you very much for asking, and it sounds like you're okay, too. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Just keep your mouth plastered to the phone.
Okay, don't
speak
keep my
up
mouth
and out,
closed,
and we'll be fine.
Okay, yeah, I'm trying to do that, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, you sound good. You sound clear.
Thank you very much. Well, whatever number is listening, it could be, 100-plus times the population of this area.
How many are in the area you're in?
To my knowledge, it's been up to 3 years ago, maybe 33,000 people. Maybe there's 1,000 or 2,000 more or hundreds more.
Wow. And you're where are you located now, Jim?
Well, at the moment, it's Morgan Hill. Which
oh, okay, and that's California. Is that close to San Jose, California?
Yeah, approximately 21 miles from certain areas in San Jose, closer to southern areas of San Jose, though. In fact,
now,
it borders San Jose.
Is that close to Monterey or Carmel?
It's on the way to Monterey. I think Monterey is about 40 to 60 miles from south of Morgan Hill, which is about approximately 1 hour from Morgan Hill, an hour and a half from San Jose, depending where in San Jose, because San Jose borders Morgan Hill.
I see, because let's see now. I think Carmel, wasn't that, or isn't that where Clint Eastwood was the mayor, the movie star Clint Eastwood?
That's right. He stars in that cinema Misty also, you know. And
yeah.
Greater mayor than the one before, you know.
Oh, okay.
Then, yeah, I think.
Wow. You know, you could talk up just a little bit.
Oh,
for some
okay,
reason, my voice booms out, but the guest voice kind of fades out. So
okay.
We don't want anybody to have to...
Yeah, it might be kind of an awkward design.
No, that's better. That's better. Much clearer.
Oh, that's good.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Well, I would like to just give our guest a little bit of background on you and what started you in music, Jim, just if you want to share with everyone about that.
Something is starting me on. It's something that I believe I can do. Maybe it's like a toy, but more like that. You know, I recall... age 2 and a half, when I see and hear a piano, I'm already, because I walked earlier than that, I'm already walking and running to the piano, and I'm starting my way of performing the thing, and I'm doing, or more than one piano, so more than one thing, and
wow.
I'm performing, or looking like I'm performing with both hands immediately, and I do recall, because memory, to my knowledge and recollection, starts at age 2 and a half, at least primarily,
yeah.
And it starts with my remembering. Well, one of the starting is my remembering performing piano, at least my way for it, from one, myself, 2 and a half.
Well, now, were you always, were you doing some kind of classical music, or do you know what you were doing at that age?
I remember realizing that I'm at a piano, but music is music, whether it's classical or popular at the time. But then when I got to hear what's popular, what's classical music, I guess I'm not liking classical music immediately. I'm liking more popular music, like You Are My Sunshine, or Shrimp Boats Are Coming for baby, during the baby years. It's like that. But I hear sometimes classical music without realizing what it is. But I think I'm more liking, the popular music kind.
You were born in San Jose, right?
Yes.
And your family musical or not?
Well,
your mom and pop?
It's like this. They're not professionals.
Uh-huh.
The father likes, and this is a clue, the father likes classical music.
Okay.
Some popular, and the mother likes more popular music, especially musicals and certain European folk music.
Oh.
Religion folk music. So later I amalgamate the two, and I have an equal, liking depending of both sets. To me, music, except for ethnic music, is one of those two main categories, classical music or popular music, but it gets kind of vague too. So
But you had some kind of support from your family as far as wanting you to go onward with your music ability?
Up to a point. They get the piano. I get a toy piano, then they get a large piano.
Uh-huh.
And there's kind of news about that large piano anyway. But later, they're not that keen, especially the father and me, making a profession of that. It looks like he would rather, during later high school years and early college years, have that more a hobby.
A hobby.
The way I would like it, the way I do, et cetera,
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure you could eat and, pay your rent. And maybe he was a little concerned about that, or maybe he just didn't like music as much as you or something.
Yeah, really not. I mean, he's not, comprehending this thing. But he loves classical music, and that's what I'm hearing from the radio when he's turning it on, too. And and gradually I get to know classical music. Even at age six, when I continue my piano lessons, I gradually get to favor classical music, but not entirely about popular music, because there's great popular music I get to know, and there's something about it's a lot shorter than classical music. But music is music. Good music, is what it is, whatever the category, with certain, things that are not that way, by one's belief, etc. But he doesn't comprehend, even when I get, if I can add the detail, even when I get an acceptance from at age 18 to the School of Music, University of Michigan.
Right.
And they really, quite a bit, would like me to attend the place. They indicate I'll be a successful pianist because of the tape made, but he's not encouraging that. I don't know if he's 100% noting the kind of tape I was able to make at the high school.
I see. Well, Jim, actually, didn't your parents come from Europe? I mean, were they weren't born in this country, or were they? Am I wrong?
No, you're definitely right. They're immigrants and refugees. Father born in Vienna, Austria. The mother from something like near Krakow, Poland, like a place called Bielitz-Biala or something like that. Then they got to be underwater in the dam.
Oh, okay. So they, maybe they had a more of an appreciation for, music than a lot of people in this country. I don't know, but in Vienna, Austria, especially all those great people that kind of, the composers that were there. Where exactly or when did you start composing?
Well, I started in this place, used to be the north city limits of San Jose, a place called Rosemary Gardens, and the place continues being there. It's like a testimony, live group of homes, the start of two automobile garages in suburbia right near the airport, the affluent after World War II kind of place, 100-plus homes, seven blocks. And that's where I start composing, in the house there, 1369 San Juan Avenue, which is about 2.5 years after I'm born.
Wow.
And, I'm born.
So you started composing at 2.5?
Yeah,
wow.
Well, maybe I am in a way, but I'm starting to be in that house at 2.5, and I start to notate at age 8, but then I start to compose by notating or writing music at age 9.
Wow. Well, who taught you how to notate, Jim, or did you just kind of know it?
I'm autodidactic on there, unlike the piano, which I could have maybe started on my own, but I kind of figure things out on my own to be able to do that.
Wow. That's amazing. You must have had some kind of genes in your background of composing.
Well, I'm wearing jeans. Not today, but I've been
You're wearing jeans. Okay, got it.
Well, the jeans wear the first.
Yeah, I, you know, to me, some child just going to the piano and starting to compose at, you know, 8 years old, or noting music at 8 years old, you know, as a mother or a father, I think it would have really shocked me. You know, I wouldn't have known quite what they were doing. But
anyway,
I guess your parents,
the
they handled
guy starts
it really
to do it too, but he doesn't continue. Yeah.
Tim, what are you doing now? I mean, okay, so from that point until now, how did your music progress? I mean, you kept composing, I would think.
Well, I like to believe it's a gradual increase in quality and theoretical materializations, you know, ever since in composing music, and even developing more and more independent, innovative styles, piano styles on the piano, like a piano.
Okay, so
has
this been a constant composing with you? I mean, you haven't really had I guess you'd call it a dry period. You just kept composing.
I continue composing, but deliberately at one time, I'm discontinuing composing for 2 years, although at times I'm sketching music too, to see how one can survive, you know, without composing, being a composer, just like being able to be okay without performing at a piano, but being a pianist, like not having a pianist. It's possible nonetheless. Because
well, how did
music,
that feel, though? Were you happy, or?
One can get happy with that, but not happy like the activity. But because a part of music is musicology, the silence, thinking, you know, up things in one's head, et cetera, and devising things, even talking about it, it's all possible, too. Yeah.
No, well, are you? Do you teach music as well as compose, or you just compose?
Yes, people get lessons from me, and I'm open for that. I don't go around advertising, no, because I like to believe I'm more a pianist than composer. Mostly, I get money, of course, piano performing at the venues at the moment, you know, where I perform.
Well, so how many years now have you been composing different songs?
I've been a composer already. Well, certainly like piano more than 35 years, but I've been, I'm going to detail that a little, just a tiny bit.
Hi.
I've been a composer, you know, my age, I'm born in San Jose the year after World War II. Of course, I'm conceived during World War II, but I get to see the light in the world without knowing what it is, of course, in that 1 year, that year, which is a turning point, and it turns out in history a little bit, too. Because that's when kind of commercial television starts, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a clue to the way of composing along with Silicon Valley. And so I started a lot of things then, but I'm born, you know, again, in the east part of San Jose, just 14 blocks from the center of the town.
Wow, Silicon Valley, for sure. You got that right. You're right in the middle of it, huh?
Yeah, it got to be that way later. And believe it or not, what I was thinking about it is that not only do I not allow that to hinder me, I allow that to encourage myself, but I'm already composing before it gets that term, Silicon Valley. There are
before.
Yeah.
Well, are you doing, like when you say composing, do you just like hear a song in your head and you just kind of note it, or do you just kind of start playing it, or how does that happen? Because for the people out there that don't have a clue about how you compose music.
Okay. Yeah, the process of composing, that's something interesting. I allow certain things out, and I allow certain things not out.
Oh. Now,
there's some things I just discard. You know, it might be a mental thing if I don't have pen or scratch paper, but some things I let through, and without scratching or etching things immediately, I might think of things, but no, I'm not going to do it this way, and it might be five or more times before I notate the final result. And composing can be more than one way. It could be, for example, by pen and paper, or it could be by performing it, and it's possible to record it without notating it, and it's even possible to sing it out. It's possible to even describe it by speech, etc. But mainly I compose by notation.
By notation. Well, when you are composing a song, do you just kind of, actually, I'm trying to figure out, when you say songs, are you talking about little tunes that people would hum to themselves? Are you talking about, because I know you've kind of gotten really, you told me you compose sonatas, is that correct?
Yeah, you know what it is, it's like I either, you know, like you hear about, the most famous example is outside myself. Is it okay if I mention an additional composer?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, for example, you know, maybe the most notable composer of this kind of way of composing is maybe Franz Schubert. Everybody hears, or a number of people hear, of his Symphony No. 8, which is the so-called unfinished symphony.
Yeah.
That he didn't complete, because usually a symphony is three or four movements, and he completes two of them.
Uh-huh.
Even though I hear of another composer kind of completing them, I don't think it's equal quality to Schubert. Instead, I alter that. I have things that I never complete. Either I word I don't complete it, or I start it. Instead of unfinished, I just word there are certain things I start.
You
but
just
I
start
never really
it.
Complete it. So a number of music, I don't know, if most of my music compositions might be examples of that, or most of them are complete things. But there's numerous compositions of mine, either by creating at the piano, never
mm-hmm.
realizing it, or recording a bit,
mm-hmm.
or notating, that I start without the completion. And a number of those have been long things. Symphonies.
Oh.
Or sometimes if it's so long, it's going to involve a lot of work activity, so that'd be a good kind of reason with distractions not to complete it, or a good way to
describe
the reason.
Well, would you like to complete all your songs, all your symphonies or sonata, or are you pretty satisfied with the way they work? I mean, they come out and you just do whatever comes out and note that?
Yeah. What happens is that I might have things from some time ago. So it'd be a separate thing if I start something, for example, years ago,
uh-huh.
and then I look upon new methods of composing. So it'd be a separate thing to latch onto that, at the present or even later on what I've done before. So I'm either waiting for like the right moments or to gather material to continue that, or instead I just compose something anew. So mostly I just have it complete, and people can even buy it or like it that way. That starts. Sometimes it even sounds like a whole music composition anyway.
Well, when I wrote the little blurb, like to get out there and in the publicity blurb, I mentioned that you had written 25,000 songs. Is that right?
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. I don't want to brag and I don't want to fib, but that is correct, and it's more than that, really. And
more than that.
Yeah. Most likely more than that, but. But, and I'd like to be able to count every one. Of course, there are reasons right now not
uh-huh.
to count, but I think that's more than approximately, correct. It's got
and
to be that way.
And this is from age 2.5 on to where you are now, right?
Well,
or is this
specifically 9, because if I include what I might create aside from notating, that would even be more than that. And if I had done it at the rate, like I especially got to like a crest, an apex, all the way in the east area of this country, where I was composing even more pieces every day. And if I continued
mm-hmm.
that today, it could be more than 40,000, more than 50,000.
Oh, my gosh.
music composition. That's the main way, I think, of noting a music composition is by the score, or what's notation. But the highest selling method has been, of course, recordings, usually by CDs or things on the computers.
Oh, but you've been selling your music.
Gradually, but that's describing, what's been, the way it's been.
Oh, I see, the way I understand. Well,
right.
Are you performing in public now? I mean, are you, can the audience find you at a certain venue in San Jose or in that area?
Right. I'm going to indicate two of them.
Uh-huh.
One is the Planet Sushi Restaurant in
okay.
north part of Morgan Hill.
Uh-huh.
And it's pretty near. It's 19500 Monterey Highway, or a Monterey Highway Road, and it's right
19500 Monterey Highway Road.
Right, it's kind of a rectangular shaped building. It's right next to a boating marina place, but it's called Planet Sushi. The sign is on top. There are a little bit
okay.
triangular colored flags right in front,
okay.
and it's right on the corner with Burnett. And coincidentally,
okay.
Burnett is the name
and
of.
And when
the,
are you there?
In your high school. I'm there primarily Fridays and Saturdays from 6 to 8 p.m.
6 to 8 p.m., Friday and
mm-hmm.
Saturday at Planet
right.
Sushi. And this is in Morgan Hill, which is about how many miles from San Jose, California?
Yeah, it's almost, the part that borders Morgan Hill, it's maybe approximately only 2 miles from that part of it.
Oh,
but it's from
okay.
various spots, because San Jose directly, borders Morgan Hill, which is a part of three towns, San Martin and Gilroy. You're familiar,
mm-hmm.
of course, with the Gilroy Garlic Festival. And those three towns comprise the South County of the South Bay of the entire San Francisco Bay Area.
And so
of 90
are you
towns.
Also doing other, like, public appearances, Jim, now in the area where people might be able to come see you?
Sure. I'm slowly, you know, rebuilding that. One place, an example, is on May 25 at 3 o'clock. That's on the Sunday. I'll be at the Foothill Presbyterian Church, and that's east part of San Jose near Elm Rock, the pretty notable, famous Elm Rock area. And that's kind of like east of, it's on McKee, which almost gets to be Elm Rock. It kind of curves. It's just before it curves onto Elm Rock Road. It's east of pretty known streets like Capitol crosses that, and then it's a little east of El Toyon. It's on the north side.
Okay, and this is on the 25th of May. At what time again?
3 p.m.
3 p.m., and the name of the church?
Is Foothill Presbyterian.
Foothill Presbyterian. And is there a number people could call, or do you know that? If not, just repeat the address.
I can give you, well, you know, the address is something, it's more, I'm not so sure if the address is that visible from the street. I think it's 5301.
5301.
But it's more by sight than by number. You're familiar
with
the
area. Well, what are you going to be doing there? What is the, what is this, are you going to be performing that people?
I'm going to be world premiering my own music compositions in two genres.
Oh, okay.
One is like what you can call like the classical continuum, like maybe the classical, but there's more specific ways to describe my music. My music to a number of people may resemble the various pretty known classical composers, whether it's Beethoven or Chopin, et cetera. And, you know, it's a separate thing. If one wants to agree, it's equal or more.
So you're going to be doing, you're going to be, this is a premiere of
it's
your.
It's a joint recital specifically, though. But I'm going to be world premiering most of the music compositions.
Oh, well, that
before.
Sounds good. And how much is it to get in, Jim?
Well, this is a donation, so in other words, a request. It would, you know, just requesting of people by the one that's arranging it at $10 each, if that sounds reasonable.
Yeah, sure. Well, so people can come and they can hear you, your premiere. Are you going to start it and have, like, CDs or MP3s available for download or any
I
way
guess
that...
In the I'm sorry, you know, I don't want to interrupt. Feel free to continue. Hello?
Oh, okay. Well, what I'm trying to find out is exactly how people can hear your music that want to, that are listening.
Yeah.
And also, can they buy some of the music that they hear and like in a CD or an MP3? Because I know when we hear somebody we like, we want to take it home with us. We want to have it in a personal way to share with all our friends, our family, our children, our neighbors. And so many people are very, very interested in how they can, you know, remember part of the evening that they really enjoyed. And I know that your music is really going to be special for people that have never heard you before, Jim.
Thank you. Thanks a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, and so basically, if they can have a piece, you know, a little bit of it to take home and just kind of share and stuff. But I don't know. Do you have any MP3s ready or CDs or any of that?
Well, there are CDs. You know, there are more details behind this whole thing, and you are familiar with a certain background that's kind of a basis even of a cinema or film or movie script, which is something outside of all of this. But there continue to be certain CDs of my piano performing and certain tapes, and friends have also been taping me at various venues where I've been performing, and we can convert those also into the CDs. In the meantime, there have been especially three CDs that are around and can make copies of those, too, later on, of my piano performing.
Oh, they're around. Well, you mean like they're with friends, or they're actually in stores, or Amazon.com, or any of that? You know, I don't know. Maybe I'll tell you what.
Later.
Yeah, could it be that people could email you, Jim, and find out later on if they, you know, if they're interested in more information?
Oh yeah, there's lots involved. The whole industrial conglomerate of that equivalent. Sure, they feel free to do that. Yeah,
okay. If you would just give them your email, I'd That would
I'm
be great.
Do that. Okay.
All right.
I think they're capitals. Capital S like Sam.
Uh-huh.
P like Paul or Peter.
Uh-huh.
H like Harry. E like Edward. R like run.
Sure.
E like Edward. S uh-huh. like Sam. S like Sam. So it's like Spheris. At yahoo.com.
Okay, so that's Spheres at yahoo.com?
Yeah, but one more S at the end.
Oh, Spheres at yahoo.com.
Yeah, they allow for that kind of thing, you know, Yahoo design
sure.
to put, be able
now,
to...
Now, is that case sensitive, or can they just...
You know, I'm not so sure. Maybe just try the capitals. If it,
oh, okay.
If
just try the capitals or the lowercase. And let me also give you, the audience, another email just in case, and I will be glad to pass your email on to them.
Thank you.
And it's real easy, judyjoyjonesshow@gmail.com. That's judyjoyjonesshow@gmail.com. And I'll be happy to pass on anything, his email, Jim Farber's email. So feel free if you, for some reason you can't get him, you can get me and I'll be glad to do that. And, Jim, I was just wondering, what are you working on now? Are you planning to do a musical? Or are you just
yeah.
kind of doing songs? Or what's in store in the future for you?
That is correct. You know, I have, I could have gotten it out, so I have the list of titles too. But I'm kind of like looking to, well, I'm definitely looking towards comprising at the moment, there could be even more than this, but at
mm-hmm.
the moment, something like 28 separate musicals.
Oh, my goodness. You're
and,
busy.
And also, yeah. Also, I look to formulate, you know, various concerti, too, and operas in the future, too, and also cinema or film music and ballets,
uh-huh.
things like that.
So you're going to do opera as well as movies.
Yeah, I got to distinguish between the opera and musical because in one way today the opera is what it is, but it's a separate thing from the grand opera before. So the musical appears to be America and England's answer mostly to our knowledge of the opera like it is during Europe, but they're two separate things nonetheless.
They really are two separate. What would you say the main thing is, Jim, between an opera and a musical?
Well, musical, it might be also the themes involved. Of course, the opera, the grand opera that we know, you know,
mm-hmm.
is coordinating with the classical musical, which we know that it incorporates the drama of symphonies and concerti, but
mm-hmm.
elaborates them further, combining it with chorus and choral techniques and various kind of interdispersing of songs and arias. So, and we could exemplify, just listen, you know, it's almost like to know the definition of water, just swim in it, you know, listen to a Verdi opera and Wagner opera, and that doesn't substitute, but that kind of clues you to what an opera is, and then listen to something like Roger Hammerstein's musical, like South Pacific,
mm-hmm.
or Oklahoma, or
mm-hmm.
even Andrew Lloyd Webber's, especially two of them the most, right, Cats and an opera, or the Schoenbach's Lays, and Miss
mm-hmm.
Saigon, you can see, you know, the separations. So the American musical or British musical,
mm-hmm.
more, well, even French, because Les is more French. You can hear that that's, that coincides with the various torch ballads of popular songs.
Mm-hmm.
But that, so just in a simple way of hearing it, you can hear the also the design is like that, too. The opera makes use more of schools of voice education and learning and also design of music composition. And it's almost like a super composition, perhaps, that you
well,
can have.
Some people were saying that opera's on its way out. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's not to sound negative. If it is, it's because of the way various composers, that's one thing. It's not because the audience or people so much. It's maybe because of the way people are, including professionals, art to music, they don't know how to compose operas
mm-hmm.
effectively to equal the quality of a Wagner or Puccini or Rossini. And
mm-hmm.
once they really can do that, then even people who look like they don't like classical music, it's my theoretical guess, are going to start to like the operas. They're not on the way out. They appear to be. They're hidden. They're unknown. It's possible to compose them a la Wagner, but it's certainly been dormant like a volcano. It's been asleep.
Like I was asleep. Well, who is your favorite? Who are some of your favorite opera composers?
Well, you know, I think by the design, you know, it would look like Mozart would be, but the Italian, where it all started along with piano. You know, it's interesting, three or four things started in Italy, and that partly answers that, and that's the piano, opera, and ballet. So the clue is Italian composers, and even even Leoncavalli and Masani, too, and then you have Ponchielli, you know, Dance of the Hours, and you have, of course, Rossini, Verdi, and Puccini, and one can like Wagner without agreeing with his philosophy, perhaps, of the Nietzschean super guy or whatever, and one can like even Richard Strauss and certain things of Tchaikovsky and Donizetti and Bellini and Rachmaninoff for opera composers and et cetera.
So you were influenced by these composers of opera or not? Or are they just kind of like favorites of yours?
They go back and forth. I mean, Chopin is not an opera composer, but I think various opera composers are even influenced by Chopin, although it's a separate medium, separate designation, you know, Chopin being through piano solo, and of course from Beethoven, the drama in Beethoven's symphony. And it goes back and forth. It goes outside. The influence is very often, and it's on the album covers about that. The influence onto music is not only music of a separate composer, but outside music, right? Like literature,
sure.
Painting.
Yeah.
That's
right. Well, as a really young child, do you remember one or two composers that really moved you or touched you or you just, you know, you felt like inspired by?
Yeah, I think, you know, believe it or not, in popular music it might be Richard Rodgers, and but in classical music it could be people like Chopin, Tchaikovsky, Brahms, etc. And I'm going to mention also opera, because that would influence me in childhood too, would be Bizet, like Carmen, and Cezanne, like you know, Samson and Delilah, for example. Child, and they're good children's music. One grows up being a child, you know, even though it's an adult theme with something like Carmen, but Cezanne is good with Carnival of Animals, and that's good towards family entertainment, a la music.
Yeah, that's really lovely.
Quick example.
It's always interesting to know, you know, what tweaked your mind to try this or that, because the average person probably doesn't know how to note music or how... I mean, they enjoy it, right? We enjoy it.
It's a lost art.
How do you get it?
Well, like, you know, Paul McCartney, you know, he's one of the wealthiest and maybe most loved composers today, you know, the Beatles. And to our knowledge, whether or not correct, he didn't fashion the music from being able to know how to notate. And then Irving Berlin, who maybe could notate or maybe not, but we hear that he only composes in one key, of 12 to 24 possible keys, and that's the key of F sharp, it just so happens. So it's interesting later what gets from the more recent composers, but they have just a separate kind of basis than earlier composers.
Wow. Well, what do you think of the Beatles?
Like,
I mean, what do you think of Paul McCartney's music?
Well, I think within rock and roll, it's a separate thing, you know, whether millions of people, of course, like rock and roll. I think within and for rock and roll, because I do like to rank composers myself. And I think within rock and roll, for me, it's easy to believe that he is number one.
Paul McCartney.
Yeah, I think for rock and roll, and maybe for most of the entirety of today's music, it's almost like by default, however, too, in certain ways.
Do you think he was better, perhaps, than John Lennon as far as composing?
I'd be more favoring Paul McCartney because it's also maybe philosophical. I think Paul McCartney is more on the track of a life success also, and I think that's kind of obvious a bit. That's
he's probably the most prolific because he has continued to compose. I mean, after all the others kind of left it, he kept composing, and it'll be interesting to know what he did do. You know,
born before me. Whether I disagree with his, you know, aesthetics, etc., my possible respect for him and additional even rock and roll composers is that they are, you know, a correct kind of commercial. They are not shy of maybe a certain combinations of music and certain right kind of things, including enterprise and business and the correct ways of money. A certain amount, I think.
Well, he certainly has done well in that respect as far as money. I mean, he's just one of the wealthiest composers, I would think, you know.
I think so. Yeah, he sold a certain amount, we hear, to Michael Jackson, too, you know.
Wow.
On the way.
Didn't he buy all the rights of Michael Jackson?
Well, it might have been Michael Jackson buying his rights.
Something
like that. The rights of the rights of Paul McCartney's music.
Yeah, well, what do you think of Michael Jackson, by the way? That's a well-known person.
Right, thank you for asking. I almost don't know what to think of various Pahlavi. You know, a number of people believe he's done naughty things at the Never Never Land that he's never supposed to do. But he called it Never Never Land. But then, too, he did or he did not, but one of the interesting things that he's done, I mean, he's come out that you have the dance crew contest on these VH1 kind of thing, and I'm even looking at that, believe it or not. They got a dance a la Thriller, the highest selling, 55 million copies, Michael Jackson. I mean, he's like more than the Tiger Woods of selling, you know, music. Now, you want music as a means, so I look upon, you know, that's a good thing. You want to surpass him, so sell some album that even surpasses him. That's really.
How many albums has he sold?
Well, more than that, but just the one album alone, copies of that, it's 55 million, I'm hearing. It's got to be.
55 million, yeah.
That's
the guy's
doing
something right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even besides Never Neverland. I mean, it's not easy to be. He was a child star, which, you know, I think he grew up in the limelight, and his life is so different than what we know. But he really has gotten out there, and everyone knows music. So, you know, we have to give him that. I think he's quite good myself. But
okay, well, in the dance, you know, within his sphere, I you know, it's some kind of pop music anyway, whether it's rhythm and blues, a little bit of rock and roll, it's a mixture of things. And he, I guess, innovates his own dance style. Is that correct? I mean, they have these contests of the next generation that they got to imitate him, they got to dance to that, they got to make up their own, but then they got to coincide with Thriller. I saw that right on TV. And they called each group of dancers, like six of them, for example, dance crew. So who could do it greatest? And you have these three judges, just like American Idol type of thing, that judge them and talk about what they could do more. So it's interesting whether or not one agrees with this kind of thing, whatever. But it's keeping music intertwined with being around and having a, you know, right kind of a wealth and being modern, you know, whether or not one agrees with this kind of music. And I think they're setting something right, which could be a good thing for today's classical music, but I think they're without it too much, you know.
Well, Jim, you know, really, your music might be called ahead of its time. Which means that, you know, in another how many years, everyone will hear a Jim Farber tune. In the meantime, do you have a hard time as far as knowing that you might be ahead of your time and da-da-da? Do you understand all that?
Yeah, even that topic alone is good enough for a 24-hour radio program. You know, what is your time or whatever it is? I mean, you can look at your watch or what time is it, you know, whatever, too. But
exactly.
It's kind of a stereotypical, you know, kind of amount of words in one way, too. You know, one can believe it is at the present, and it will be soon.
Yeah, I think it's coming, and in the meantime, I know that people will love to hear your music. And again, would you tell them it's May what that they can hear you?
Okay. Oh yeah, it's May 25. It's a springtime, the May month, the very month of May, the one that April flowers. April has flowers too, but the showers.
Right.
In May, and things in May cause June to get things too.
Okay. Yeah. So, and what?
It's
give
May
me the
time,
church, May. The Presbyterian Church address, name.
A holy place, May 25, at the foothill, right at the foot of the hills of Elm Rock. And because of that, they indicate that it's good. I call one of my compositions like the Elm Rock Concerto.
Elm Rock Concerto. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Maybe introduce
this. Wow, I would love to hear that. I'm sure people will, you know, that listen to this program would love to hear some of your music. Maybe you can call in. Maybe we could have another program where you play just bits and pieces. You know, you don't play the whole song, but bits and pieces of certain things you've written, if you would like.
Yeah.
Because people, when they hear the actual sound, you know, that kind of resonates into a different dimension as far as words.
Well, what
but
music
when they
can
actually
do.
Hear your music, that's
yeah, yeah.
a whole different thing.
It's a galactical experience, so to speak, but it's on Earth.
Yeah.
Nonetheless.
Galactical. That's
can
a good
elevate one. And illuminate.
Yeah. Well, Jim, what? There's a composer who is quite well known now. His name, I think, John Adams. What do you think about his music?
Well, you know, I don't want to put off, you know, people. I'd like to hear more to really get the right, you know, description of it. And, you know, it's one thing when he has the name of the number two president of the United States, too. So one knows that name anyway, and then it coincides with the composer. Well, he has a
Dixon
kind of
in China.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I even heard that or heard a part of
it. Oh,
that.
Okay.
I've heard a little bit of a teller music, you know. And I just have, you know, myself, for one thing, but I've heard a tiny moments of his music. I've
uh-huh.
heard maybe a few moments of that recent opera about Teller, not Penn and Teller, but Edward Teller and the making of the nuclear bomb, you know, from Einstein's theory of relativity. And then
sure.
I heard something about harmonies on the, and something else, you know. I heard one of his music sounded like background music or score music, and that sounded like that was on the way to something. And maybe I heard a tiny bit of his piano music, and then I heard something else on the radio, and I was deliberately listening to that. It was kind of a repetitive thing. It's a minimalistic kind of music, but then he's gotten away from that to some kind of drama. Whatever I think, I mean, I just put it mildly without direct kind of making a war kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it just sounds like, you know, I think I may have quite a bit of a disagreement on the basis of what I hear, but I'd
mm-hmm.
like to base it on hearing more so I can really get across more correct things about the whole thing. But I think, you know, his type, along with an additional bunch of composers, he gotten to be, yeah, the most familiar today. I am questioning the direction.
Okay.
For one thing.
Well, I understand that.
And
I mean,
there's more things too, but I don't want to sound wrong. I don't want to sound hateful or disparaging.
No, I understand.
I want to base it on really hearing the music and knowing it more. But privately, I mean, I can have my beliefs about the whole thing. But you know, like pretend he's in the room with me or something like that, and I get to talk with him, so I don't want to start off something that's going to say, I don't like you, or wait.
Okay,
you know,
I understand.
Like
Jim, we have a caller who would like to ask you a question. Would that be all right?
All the time.
All right, just a moment. Hello?
How do you do?
Hi, how are you?
Well, in certain ways I'm okay, in certain ways could be great. I
oh,
like to believe you're
caller?
Okay.
Hello? Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing all right.
Oh, hi. Well, we have Jim Farber, who is a composer of classical music, 25,000 songs.
Yeah.
And I think I recognize this is Judith Ain.
Judith.
Yeah, her name is
hi.
Judith. This is Jim.
Hi, nice
hi.
To meet you.
We got Jays in the room.
Jays in the room.
Jays, okay.
A lot of Jays.
That's good.
Yeah, Judith was on our show not too long ago, and she spoke about Lyme's disease, right?
Disease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
about that. She and I were on the Great Peace March, Jim. Judith
good.
Was like the minute. Would you say the mediator or the minister, Judith?
I'm an Episcopal deacon.
Uh-huh.
So I did had some services and did some things like that. But I was on the judicial board, which
mm-hmm.
was our judicial wing of the Peace City government. And
okay.
so if people had complaints about other people or whatever, they would file them with the judicial board, and we'd hear them and try and see what we could do to help people get back together, you know, or whatever, get back in.
Yeah, because even though it was a peace march, we had a few disagreements now and then, even though it should, you know, you think a peace march or a peace walk, you're all
mm-hmm.
going to get along. But, you know, Jim, Judith actually, didn't you have like a scholarship, Judith, to Stanford
And well, I didn't have a scholarship, but I did go to Stanford.
Uh-huh.
And I used to sing in a lot of choirs.
Oh.
I sang a lot of choral music, and I also played some instruments. I started on the clarinet, and then I played the saxophone.
Wow, that's hard.
I was the director of the Peace City Chorus, not one of the most popular musical groups on the Great Peace March, but I
well, you know, there were a lot. Yeah, I remember one of your songs. It was like Job, about Job in the Bible or something. It was so good. Yeah. Judith,
I heard about that.
She was a physicist, right, Judith? Or you still are?
Well, math was my primary, but also I had also did physics.
Physics, yeah.
I actually graduated in pure math mostly.
Math, uh-huh. So you probably understand where, you know, composition comes from as far as, you know, the math part of it, the timing and all that. I know, Jim, you've got that down.
Yeah, it's part of arithmetic to describe that.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
One can believe music itself is not mathematics or arithmetic, that it's even above it, but could use both to describe various things, and maybe the feat, the requirement to compose a music in the highest kind of way is no less than equal to the requirement, but in a separate kind of field, the amount of knowledge or mental strength to have to devise things in physics and math.
Mm.
Yeah. Go ahead, Judith.
There was something I heard a very interesting interview. I think it was a musician up at UCSC. I'm in Santa Cruz.
Okay. How's the water?
I think they were talking about EP something Bach, where CD and some other things where somebody did a computer program to analyze various composers' styles and then write music in that style.
Right.
And have you heard of that?
Not specifically. I heard of things like that. There are examples of orchestra variations where, like, one composer is making a set of variations and then pretending, what would this theme be if Mozart composed this, or Tchaikovsky composed it, or Brahms, et cetera, throughout the whole composition. I heard of something like that, though.
Yeah,
but that's interesting about the computer being able to
take it. It somehow went through and analyzed. I know they had some Chopin and Bach and a number of different composers that they went through, and the music was quite amazingly sounded like the composers. What got you into composition? I mean, what is your
I'm trying to figure that out a little bit. I know that I was hearing, you know, various things on the radio and a little bit on television at the time, and that got me to compose, and I believed I could do it. You know, I have sheet music in front of me at age 8 and 9, and it's very peculiar. I'm not so familiar with Bach at that age, but I'm thinking to myself, if Bach could do it, I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost thinking like that.
Uh-huh.
It's just a simple, there are notes, you just put the circles on the lines, and that's a part of it, but then you got to correspond to what's going to happen on the piano. So I'm starting to kind of like pell-mell, almost like random notate, but I don't, and I'm trying to get across something that sounds definitely put together like a sound, but even at 8 I recall that I'm not really getting anything done through the notation. This is partially answering your question. Until at age 9, then I start to formulate what sounds to me more a bona fide music composition, but they're so short, so it almost like doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
Until really years later, they're a little bit longer. Then I look that to be a music composition. But then even years later, because I'm able to sell even the shorter things, and they could kind of count to be music composition. It depends sometimes on what various people hear too, and then I can agree on that too. So maybe what gets me, and there's more to it than is just influence.
Well, you know, Jim, I have heard some of your music, and it does sound a little like Bach, you know, to me, but I'm not a expert on, you know, on music, so.
I include that because there was one recital that I'm performing mostly my own music, and the host, aware I'm performing the music, would like me to program my music based on what of my music sounds like an influence of what kind of composers, and to keep it like a chronology. So in other words, certain of my music compositions could be an influence like by Bach, and certain ones might be a more classic, might sound like a Mozart, possible Beethoven influence, and then some might sound like a Chopin, Liszt, Tchaikovsky influence, and even Bartok, and maybe Shostakovich, Rachmaninoff, etc. But the thing is, it's good for a composer to entertain perhaps a compliment that one's music sounds like the next, but is it correct to agree that it's really great that the composer has his own, you know?
Well,
style?
Yeah, but don't you agree we build on each other? We kind of...
Oh, sure. Like Beethoven. I mean, it's obvious that Beethoven, you listen to various Beethoven, and he knowledgeably and noticeably and obviously, I think he has the influence, am I right, of Haydn and Mozart. That's kind of obvious. Less obvious might be, and maybe it's from reading more about Beethoven, that there's also influence by additional composers that we know, like Handel and Bach, but also the lesser ones, like maybe Albert Sprecher, you know, like the teachers who today we would not, you know, agree that's on the level of Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. But there are also the lesser-known composers, like for example, Brahms is also loves and is influenced by the composer Gluck, and Mozart is complimenting Gluck to the extent that he believes there's something about his music that includes something even above melody, and that sounds like a futuristic kind of thing. So various composers are influenced by the next composer, but we don't always know about that next composer. You know, they're hidden like a composer like Spohr or Bach, a Bax, you know, B-A-X, for example. We know the high-level composers, and we agree that they are, but it's a separate thing.
Well, I think Judith might have a question. Go ahead, Judith.
Please.
Well, do you write, like, symphonies, or do you write for particular, like, writing for particular instruments?
Yes, you know, I compose designating, to my knowledge, every Western music instrument, if I know the sound and the range of it, mostly piano solo, but you almost name it, word it, and I most likely compose towards that. I mean, it's all the way kind of throughout the orchestra, piccolo, flute, and the woodwinds, and trumpet, and French horn, and the brass, and violin, and violoncello, and the string instruments, and even guitar, and harp, and timpani, percussion, etc., organ.
Okay. So you do a lot. Well, you know, we have about 4 minutes left, and
okay.
I want to go ahead and let Jim wrap up what he would like to kind of share with everyone that might be listening, and if they would like to get in touch with you, Jim, for any question. If you would repeat your email.
Okay. It's, I'll put it like this, SPHERESS. So S like Sam, P like Pat or Paul or Peter, H like Harry, E like Edward, R like run away or run to something, E like Edward, S like Sam, S like Sam.
Okay.
Spheris.
At yahoo.com, right, Jim?
Right. Try the capitals. It might be good at whatever the case.
Oh, okay. No problem. Okay. So, Judith, in the last 3 minutes, did you have something you'd like to ask Jim?
Where do you play? Where might people hear your music played?
Although it's more than this, but one of the places is Planet Sushi Restaurant, and that's right at the corner of Monterey Highway and Burnett. It's a few traffic signals north of Cochrane, which is a major exit from the 101, 101, you know, freeway.
Mm-hmm. In California.
California. I'm trying to think of where the Monterey Highway is.
Okay. It used to be the main route from San Jose all the way to Los Angeles, but then you have 101, or kind of a local route, partially, too. And it's, although it's possible to get off at Bailey from 101 and then travel south on that for a while. And so that's one of the places. It's 19500, so it's like the start of South County. It's kind of a...
Oh, San Jose is like in South County from San Jose?
San Jose would be like the South Bay area of Santa Clara County, but this is even south of San Jose, within Santa Clara County.
Yeah, like toward Morgan Hill or Gilroy.
Yeah, this is Morgan Hill. And coincidentally, Morgan Hill, I read, is the center, north and south of all of California. Because there was something about earthquakes, so they know Morgan Hill is like an epicenter.
Well, Jim, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing with us about your music, and
well,
we would
welcome.
Love to hear from you again and see what you're up to, and maybe the next time you would share a little bit of your music. I know you could just play at your piano and put the phone by there, and, you know, just a little bit. We could hear what you do.
Okay.
And Judah, thank you so much for calling in, and I want to remind everyone that next week on Tuesday, a publisher, his name is Casey Swanson of Daily Swan Publishers, will be my guest, and actually he published my book. He mainly, though, publishes science fiction. If you know anyone who has a yearning to get out something they have in their closet, like a manuscript for science fiction, do call in, and that will be Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And I look forward to talking to anyone then and connecting you with Casey Swanson. And Jim, thank you again. And Judith,
thank you again.
You'll have a great night.
You can publish my science fiction music, too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, good night.
Bye.
Jim?
Hello?
Jim?
Oh, thanks for being on. Hello?
Yeah,
so it was 15 minutes longer than the 45 minutes she indicated, but 30 minutes less than the 90 minutes she initially indicated.
Okay. See, I managed to stay. I had a feeling it was going to be an hour long anyway. So.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah, it kind of was pretty good. So interesting that the person calling, I don't know what number of people are really listening. Maybe she'll have that answer later if there's no makeup on that.
Who was the third person there?
Well, she was a person that she's interviewing approximately a week ago.